Welcome back to part two of that classic rock show on WHRULP, Huntley Community Radio, 101.5 FM, where we play the greatest music of all time. We are talking with the great Ronnie Rice of the New Colony Six. So,
great, huh? I didn't know I was, well, I know I'm big, but great, you know, sorry.
Well, your music career at this point is going pretty well. It's 1966, and you moved to Quill Records and a group called Ronnie Rice and the Gents. So tell us a little bit about the Gents, and then you're recording La Do Da Da, which is an interesting title.
Latin Da Da Da. I think what it was, the song itself, I don't know what made me record that. Pete Wright had the label, Quill, and he had a couple other labels as well, which were all, you know, part of his plan, I suppose. And again, Pete was my manager. So as it turns out, Latin Da 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 was a song that I don't know if it was Buddy Holly or Dale Hawkins. It was one of these guys. Dale Hawkins, the guy who did Susie Q, the original guy. And from what I understand, obviously I liked the tune, or else I wouldn't have recorded it. Nothing became of that either. So I have a long list of stiffs. But again, got on the radio, and I think it did. And that was pretty much the deal. Not much became of that either. But again, we tried to make it work, or, you know, to put it on. And it goes to show you that human beings are a little smarter than we give them credit for in some cases, because they obviously know what they want, what they don't want. But I feel very fortunate, because again, if it weren't for Dick Biondi, you wouldn't even heard of yours truly or the New Colony Six. You wouldn't have heard of any of us.
Well, you never know who's going to help you along the way.
So, no, it's timing. Yeah, timing is a big deal. And again, who you meet, and fortunate if you get lucky. And I feel very blessed, very lucky, very lucky.
All right. Well, we're going to play La Do Da Da by Ronnie Rice and the Gents on Quill Records from 1966.
Don't make me cry. Oh no. Oh no. I asked you once before.
After that great song in 1966, you decided to attend Columbia College Chicago, and there's some fellows you met up with. Can you tell us about who those guys were and how that occurred?
Absolutely. I went to Columbia College for about an hour and a half. I wasn't big on learning. I was big on talking, as I'm doing now. Bottom line is, there are these guys there. They call the New Colony Six. Nobody knew who they were. I didn't know who they were. They were familiar with my background, mainly because they'd heard my you know, my they've heard me on the air because they would hear so many songs that you've been playing on the radio. So I was fortunate back then. Again, people were aware of my background. So the county, about a year, they got established. Pete and Howard, I don't know how it exactly happened. I know that Pete Wright was in the studio with us, and we went to the sound studios, and the New Colony had told me when they were at Columbia College, they're going to record their first single. And I said, hey, can I go over there? I know the studio. And they said, absolutely. That's where I did my first. No, that isn't where I did first. But anyway, I went to the studio to watch them do their first single called I Confess. I was there at the time, and Pete Wright was there, who was a producer, I guess. He became their manager after that, as well as mine, so on. And as it turns out, I Confess was their first single. And it came out, and a guy named, what's his name? Stuart. I forget his whole name. Anyhow, he was the one who recorded. He came up with an idea in the studio. I remember him saying, let's put the guitar when they do I Confess. I Confess, everyone, this one for you. Kind of Leslie. Came out of a Leslie speaker, was his idea. I think it really added to the tune. And they had their first hit because of Pete Howard again. These guys got it on the radio. And history ever since then, thinks they got better. They got better. And, yeah, that was it.
All right. Well, it happens to be one of my wife's favorite songs from the New Colony Six. But,
oh, thanks.
Okay, well, you've got your vocal talent, and then you bring your songwriting ability to the NC6. Tell us, do you have a process for writing a song, or is there a certain approach that you take?
Oh, no. Oh, by the way, let's back it up a bit here, because after the New Colony record, I Confess, a year thereafter, they asked me if I would join the group. They wanted me to take the place of their keyboard player. I don't play keyboards. At least, no, sir. But I was faking it pretty good. In other words, it worked for a while until I brought in a different keyboard player named Chuck Jones, who actually knew how to play piano fantastic. So he was a seventh member. But in the beginning, again, after the first year of the colony being established, when I Confess, they asked me if I would audition. And I did, in the basement of one of the guys, and I passed the audition, baby. And then the first song I was on with the New Colony was I Love You So Much. And I sang background, and then after that, I started singing lead to a few things, and a few of which I wrote. And as you were saying, I think you were asking me about what's the process.
Yeah, do you have a certain approach to writing music?
No. I just sit. No, I don't have any kind of thing. Okay. Nothing.
All right.
I don't even know. I sit down seriously. This is honestly got true. The guy wrote "I Will Always With Me" and things I like to sing with me. Anyway, I will always. Was a guy named Les Kummel, and he was a friend of mine. I actually brought him later in the New Colony as well to replace the bass player at the time, Wally Kemp, the original bass player. As it turns out, Les and I, it probably took us 15 minutes to write I'll Always Think About You. And I played it for him. I don't know at which point. I think he told me at one point there's one chord. He said, look, why don't you change it to this chord? Oh, good idea. And that's how I Will Always Think About You came about. It took about 15. I presented it to New Colony Six. They didn't think it was a hit. Ray Graffy didn't think it was. And Mercury Records did not think it was. And if it weren't for Pete and Howard, as I mentioned, the two biggest promoters in the city. Guess what? If it weren't for them, you wouldn't hear it. A week after it was brought into WLS, WCFL at the time, it became number one in Louisville, Kentucky. And like I say, WLS, I mean, not WLS, I'm sorry, the record company, Mercury Records, they did not think I Will Always Think It Was Hit. They thought Treat Her Groovy, which is something else I wrote prior, and didn't do anything. They thought that was the hit. Again, if it weren't for Pete and Howard, they're the ones that got it started. That evening, when it was premiered on WCFL, they had what they call a capsule countdown. So you'd sit by the radio, you'd see if your song came in at all. And at 3 in the afternoon, I remember a guy named Jim Stagg, who premiered the tune, I Will Always Hunt WCFL, I didn't hear it. And all of a sudden, I said, we didn't make it. Oh, I can't believe it. That same day, that same evening, here are the top 10. Number 10, this, number 9, 8, 7. I said, we never made it. And I'm talking to myself. And all of a sudden, bingo, number one requested that night was I Always Think About It. And all of a sudden, bingo, bingo, became a big record. So, knock on wood.
We're going to play that song in a while, but before we play that, here's a song you wrote very early on with the group, and you mentioned it in 2 seconds ago. We're going to play Treat Her Groovy.
I treated them right. I lost quite a few. That's why tonight I'm gonna treat her groovy, take her to a movie. Tell her she's fine. Treat her groovy, take her to a movie. Show her the time. Show her.
All right, that was Treat Her Groovy, very early NC6 song. Mm-hmm. Well, Ronnie, things are going very well for the band in 1968, but what happened next was an explosion. All right, listen to this. You guys are in the top 5 songs on the WLS Hit Parade the week of March 25th, 1968. Now, listen to this. Number 5 was an Aretha Franklin song. Number 4 was a Gary Puckett and Union Gap with Young Girl. Number 3 was Valerie by the Monkees, probably the most popular band at the time. Then these guys from Liverpool, can't remember their names, were number 2 with Lady Madonna. You know what the number 1 song was in Chicago that week?
No.
I Will Always Think About You, a song that you wrote. So let's listen to I Will Always Think About You.
Love within me for you. Spend together with fine the nights, the
Ronnie, that is one of the best songs, I think, ever. I mean,
oh, are you sweet? Well, thank you so much.
I'm talking about the Beatles and everyone. Why don't you tell us a little bit how that song came about?
Well, I tell you, we usually, when I write something, I sit down with a guitar and I just start doing something. I have no idea where it's going. I just start doing it, start singing. I don't do this first or that first. I do them both at the same time, writing it. You know, the thought of what I'm doing. I don't particularly write it down at the time. And that came to my mind. I will always think about you. That came up. and then again, a friend of mine who I had with me at the time in my home was Les Cummel. And he added to it. He had a couple of things to say about words, whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, we're done with it in about 15 minutes. And that's pretty much it. There wasn't really that much thought behind it. And later on, I would play it. It's kind of interesting because the reaction I got, even from New Colony when I first presented it to them, I think it was one of the guys in the band or a couple of guys didn't think it was that great of a tune. They didn't think, whatever. And I think about the title of the tune. I decided, let's just hit it with the first line, and that will be the title. And that slide coming down like that, again, when I was in the studio, I said, let's start it with that. It kind of grabs people's attention a little bit. And sure enough, it turned out to be the first big tune that we had. And talk about being excited. It was great. That's pretty much the whole story on it. There was really, oh, I know. We go driving around, and I know people that I would play it for, like over the phone. I played for some young ladies or whatever, because I was also 12 at the time. Not really, but actually I was about 22, whatever. So the bottom line, you know, they would react incredible to it. I remember one girl cried or something. So I said, maybe we got something here. But like I say, if it weren't for Pete and Howard Bednow, Pete Wright and Howard, we wouldn't have been heard of. Nobody would have known. Because like I say, Mercury didn't think it was a hit. New Colony, a couple of guys didn't think it was anything. And we fooled them.
Well, you beat out the Beatles for number one.
Yeah. That's, you know, I went to the store, I remember at the time, looking for a WLS survey just so I could show people that we hit it a little higher that week than the Beatles on the WLS. That was kind of a cool feeling.
Well, Ronnie, I'm going to let you have this word. The approach that you take to songwriting is called noodling.
Oh, is that what it is?
You noodle. You come up.
Oh,
you noodle.
I'm a noodler.
Yeah, you're a noodler.
Taste good too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, later that same year, the New Colony 6 released another song that you wrote, and it was called Things I Like to Say.
Oh, yeah.
This was a national hit, and it charted number 13 in the USA and number 2 in Chicago. So what does it feel like at the time? What did it feel like to have a national hit?
It's incredible because, again, well, this is what's interesting. Larry Lujack at the time, we wanted to put ourselves into an up-tempo feel. So we recorded something which might have been a B-side. I'm not even familiar with the B-side. Might have been People and Me, whatever. Lou Jack said, turn it over. I believed in the tune. I thought it was a winner. And other people did as well, obviously. So when they did do that, and all of a sudden things like to say got on the Billboard charts, and it went from, from what I understand, it went from 95 to 45 in 1 week. And we knew we had a winner on that. And I used to keep track of it after that. That was the biggest song we ever had. And that song itself did top 10 in every major market, every major market. Unfortunately, because of the, saturation of promotion, by the time it was dropping here from number 2, it was just starting elsewhere. So you didn't have the saturation of it being everywhere at the same time. Hmm. So in Billboard, for instance, in 13, you got two in Cashbox. Billboard, it only hit 16. Whereas generally, if everything is right as far as promotion, it should have been top 10 nationally because it was top 10 in L.A., New York, Chicago, Milwaukee, all over the country. So that's why it should have shown that, but it didn't show that on the charts the way it should have been. But again, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. That's all.
So let's listen to the song, Things I Like to Say.
Like we do. Baby, baby, it's you I'm thinking of. In the morning when I wake up, in the evening, it's you that I dream of. Sometimes love hurts, and sometimes love's unkind, and sometimes you might feel.
Dick Biondi was such a huge influence on New Colony 6, but also all the other Chicago bands, Crying Shames, Buckingham, Shadows of Night. And I just want all the people to know that you guys still play together, and you got a show coming up called The Cornerstones of Rock. You've played the Arcata many times in the Desplaines Theater, but you have a show coming up October 1st at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. And I photographed so many of those shows, and they're so much fun. I really hope everyone goes to see them. And once again, it all started with a TV special on WTTW. So, folks, if you're listening, go ahead. Go see these great bands. We have one more thing to talk about, and you talked about another person earlier on who is a big influence, and you said Chuck Berry. So we're thinking we're going to close out the show with Maybelline. Just tell us a little bit about why Chuck Berry really influenced you.
You know, I think when you hear things, when I listen to a song, I don't listen to the lyrics right away. And I listen to the production, listen to the way it makes you, you tap your feet, you enjoy it. And everybody, just like a haircut, everybody has a different taste for food. Everybody got a different taste. I personally just like that drive. I like the way it caught my ear, you know, and I loved it. And it's really not much to say, except it was simple, you know, just same thing with Elvis' stuff. In the beginning, there weren't much on the tunes. If you listen to the records, you'll hear that there weren't big productions as it were later in the recording business. You would hear things very simple, bass, drums, guitar, lead guitar. And Chuck Berry was simple, piano player, guitar, bass, drums, and him singing. And it was incredible because it had everything. And so it didn't need anything else. Excuse me. They had the feel. They had the feel. So everything was, it caught my ear. And that was, again, one of the things that influenced me. And so a lot of times when I play guitar, if I play when I'm doing stuff, that kind of boogie feel, that kind of shuffle, that kind of feel I incorporate with what I do.
Well, Ronnie, we want to thank you for joining us today. Also, congratulations on being inducted into the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum and Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
Folks, you could join us every week, Mondays from 6:30 to 7:30 and Fridays from 11 to noon on the Mighty 101.5 FM, Huntley Community Radio. And we're going to close out with Chuck Berry doing Maybelline. Thank you, Ronnie.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing out to run my V8-4. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do. A Cadillac pulled up to 104. My Ford got hot and wouldn't do no more. The gun got cloud and started to rain. I tooted my horn for the passing lane. The rainwater blowing all under my hood. I knew that I was doing my motor good. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true?